need to be able to effectively interrogate AI to get the best from it.
I think we'll see a focus on critical core skills.
It's likely to think that budgets are going to be tight and scrutinised.
I think that we can all better show impact and also help numbers-driven colleagues understand why investment in learning and development is so valuable.
Welcome to the Training Journal podcast. I'm editor of Training Journal and your host, Jo Cook. I send questions to professionals across our industry and have brought their thoughts together. My first question has to be about predictions for the coming year, and equally as predictably, artificial intelligence is at the forefront. Tina Seth, head of UK development and consultancy at our sister company, Dodds Training, starts us off by looking at the experience she's having in a home setting and how she can see that applying to the workplace.
I think artificial intelligence will start playing a bigger role. I see my son talking to his little AI friend and asking questions and getting really quite full responses, almost using the technology as a coach. And as the AI friend gets to know him better, the answers are more tailored to him, his personality and his interests. And I see coaching applications being developed in this way. And there's something really to think about tapping into that kind of technology for simple coaching programs.
David Perring is Chief Insights Officer at Fosway Group, and he said,
"The first is AI is going to continue to cause the commoditization of classic e-learning. That is going to put a certain section of the learning technology market under increased pressure over 2024 and beyond."
Fosway's Digital Learning Realities 2023 infographic shares that only 45% of L&D professionals surveyed say that their learning platforms are fit for the modern workplace, and that the best learning platforms are twice as likely to be reported as right for the workforce versus modules bolted onto HR platforms. Agreeing with David is learning strategist Andrew Jacobs.
First one is about understanding and increasing digital integration. Artificial intelligence, whether that be large language models, other algorithms that can personalise learning for people, I think are going to grow. I think we'll see a focus on critical core skills. There seems to be a growing importance on critical thinking, adaptability and flexibility. And I think we'll see that integrated into learning programmes much more than we have done.
This mention of core skills is essential in our work within people development or for organisations. In the World Economic Forum Future of Jobs Report 2023, they state that analytical thinking and creative thinking remain the most important skills for workers in 2023. Picking up on the skills element with AI is Sue Stockdale, an executive coach.
"My predictions for learning and development in 2024 is that AI will change how learning and development is delivered. And one of the things that is going to be important for people to be paying attention to is a focus on questions. Why is that important? Because we need to be able to effectively interrogate AI to get the best from it. So a focus on how to construct questions to get optimal results. And of course, the quality of the questions that get asked will determine the quality of the output."
Learning and Skills Development Manager at the National Lottery Heritage Fund, Daniel Taylor, also focuses on AI and adds in his expertise on coaching too. And thank you, Daniel, for contributing, even with a very sore throat.
"I think there's going to be a real growth within AI, automation, new technology, all of these sort of things, specifically around coaching and learning development. You can really see aspects of coaching being monetized way more and also democratized so it can be rolled out to the masses. And that is something I think is going to be increasingly major within 2024. Learning and development will continue to have to adapt within this world of flexible working that we find ourselves within, particularly with a shift away from the physical office. So more hybrid, more recordings, all these sort of things. However, there is a real need, though, to really rethink these. Come up with new ideas, new ways of working, particularly within learning and development. So it's not just about a webinar. It's not just a video or a podcast. So we need to be more creative in 2024.
The hybrid working environment is an interesting trend, but much less talked about as we move away from COVID lockdowns and AI has taken the spotlight. The Evolution of Work report from WorkHuman found that 87% of respondents who are fully remote are satisfied with their work arrangement, versus 67% who are hybrid and just 60% who are fully on-site. Continuing the exploration is John Kennard, who is now content editor at Fosway Group, but was once a colleague of mine whilst he was editor here at TJ.
I think co-pilots are going to feature really, really heavily, probably off the back of Microsoft's entry to the market, just because they're such a familiar brand with a lot of people. And the impact of that on L&D is going to be that AI assistants are going to figure really, really highly in the way that people learn. And I think that's something that L&D departments at kind of a collective level and an individual level need to work into their plans about how they're going to use them, whether they're going to see them as a threat, whether they're going to see them as an enabler of what learning and development can achieve. I also think there's going to be a lot more Gen AI, generative AI innovation. I subscribe to a newsletter called Superhuman, which I would thoroughly recommend to people, which kind of flags up on a daily basis the five new AI platforms and tools out there that are helping people achieve in business more quickly and more impactfully. And there are so many on a daily basis.
This point about content creation is interesting, as a lot of people are using AI in this way to be more efficient in their roles. Paul Matthews, CEO of People Alchemy, has this to say.
Predictions. It's always been a bit tricky predicting the future, but there are some inevitable trends in L&D which are likely to play out, unless there's some new seismic shift that changes the playing field in some way. I think some of what will come is pretty obvious given the current trajectory. I mean, AI is going to be a big change, increasing personalization using AI. But of course, we also have to remember that AI is not the only way to personalize learning. There are other ways to do this at the point of delivery. AI is also going to be used for content and course creation, and that's liable to make things more efficient.
Digging into this point about AI being a great tool, but it's about how you use it, is Stella Collins, Chief Learning Officer at Stella Labs.
I think in 2024, some people are going to get much more involved with AI, and thanks very much to insights from people like Egla Viniscauta and Donald Clark, because they really talk about how AI can support learning if you've got a really solid foundation underpinning what you're doing. There's no point just generating more content or fancy images, because that won't change behaviours. There'll still be too much focus on knowledge and content, possibly exacerbated by AI, and there won't be enough about skills and how they connect to organisational success. So people like Will Tolheimer and I will still have work to do convincing people how to use an evidence-based approach to learning at work.
Coming back to Paul Matthews, there's an interesting link between skills and data.
We'll still see the same rhetoric around upskilling and reskilling. Hopefully this leads to a more skills-based approach rather than a content-led approach, which is so unfortunately common at the moment. Remote and hybrid learning will remain on the agenda as organisations continue to find the new normal in terms of remote working. I think there'll also be an increased emphasis on performance support in the workflow. I mean, costs are going to drive this move, as well as a realisation that moving learning closer to the point of need often works better. And of course, the technology is changing and making this bringing their learning right next to the point of need much more easy to do these days. There'll be the continue to be the usual lip service, you know, to data and analytics, and not much more action. So many people talk about it, and yet I seldom see it really happening in a good way out there in organizations I have talked to. People know it's a good idea, but usually stumble on trying to implement, or it gets pushed to one side as other jobs take priority.
Andrew Jacobs has this prediction about data.
I think there'll be a move towards data-driven learning and development. I probably want there to be a move towards data-driven learning, but I think the data is now there. We have analytics tools, and I think we will develop those further. And I think we'll understand how to use real-time feedback mechanisms, particularly if we understand how to use the AI technology in order to make this stuff work.
Paul Westlake also agrees with this. Paul is Digital Director at People Unboxed, and his first prediction is all about focusing on data.
I think for me, the big one, I think, is going to be the rise of what we call digital intelligence, or DXI, a way to collect, analyze, and use data to understand and improve the way people interact with digital products. So we use it for customer analysis. Those digital products will include LMS, e-learning, employee apps, and businesses will use this to understand how their people are interacting with those and therefore improve employee engagement and ultimately business outcomes. So DXI, I think, is going to be pretty huge. It's going to help L&D professionals understand the needs of learners and therefore identify the most effective learning methods and the best way to track and impact training programs.
Answering this question in a slightly different way is Tom Brown, Director of Dodge Training.
Naturally, I asked ChatGPT what it thought about this, as it can tie in some longer, steadier trends, and also because making predictions can be a bit of a fool's game. Mostly it was standard stuff from ChatGPT, so digital literacy, agreed from me. Soft skills development, agree from me. Personalized learning experiences, strong agree for me. Microlearning and just-in-time, strong agree for me. All of those, I think, will be big this year.
Budget comes into the predictions next, and Tom comments on ChatGPT's suggestion about augmented and virtual reality in training delivery.
Now, I'm less sure about this one. The capital investment's still pretty significant for AR, VR, and even though the market's evolving, I think that across the board, most companies and industries are tightening up spending and shoring up in case there's some sort of economic downturn in the coming year. So I don't think we're going to see that big jump yet. I know that there's been steady progress for AR, VR, but that's not one for me this year.
And then ChatGPT brought the conversation back round to data-driven decision-making and showing value, which Tom thinks is one of its best suggestions.
Increasingly, the tools are there for this one, and data can help a better understanding of real return on investment as more data is captured across businesses. I think that we can all better show impact and also help numbers-driven colleagues understand why investment in learning and development is so valuable.
Gail Watson is Managing Director at Sync Skills and brings us a timely reminder about predictions.
If we've learned anything since February 2020, is that predictions can be futile. However, we still need to plan for the future, or we'll end up being stuck in a reactive space where we can't feel we can't control anything and feel under pressure. I would say that due to the uncertainty in the political and economical environment, it's likely to think that budgets are going to be tight and scrutinized. And more than ever, it will be key to demonstrate impact and value as a provider, as a professional, internal professional, and as an industry as a whole. Probably it shifts our L&D roles in a much more strategic place, trying to really focus on performance, measurement, and working with the new tools that are given to us through AI, which also means that we need to look at the long term for skills, competence, and behavior mapping, as well as understanding measure to impact and evaluation. So data will still be at the heart of everything we do, and we need to get a further grasp.
Fosway Group's Digital Learning Realities 2023 report has highlighted that the number of L&D teams who expected their overall budget to decrease has risen from 8% in 2022 to 21% in 2023, and that teams expecting to see an increase has shrunk by over 10%. David Perring also comments on continued growth in skills as the way to shape people's strategies.
It's not going away from any other part of the HR lifecycle, and it's going to impinge its influence on learning even more so in people development strategies in 2024 and beyond. And finally, the tightening of budgets. We've seen this year be a year of constraint, and I think that is going to continue into 2024, which really means that the high-performing L&D teams and the ones with budgets are going to be the ones that prove their value.
Tina Seth continues on this budget element, as well as the prediction that training isn't going anywhere.
So I think the biggest thing will be that the public sector will have budget constraints. I'm hearing that from clients and L&D leads already. So I think there will be much more of a focus on smart spending and encouraging a proactive and self-driven L&D culture. However, to get consistency in management practices and behaviours, consistency in how people develop policy, you will still need group programmes, I think, and departments will need to think about how to prioritise and fund those.
As mentioned at the beginning and highlighting how a lot of this work is intertwined, Paul Westlake comments on agility as the workplace evolves.
Organisations will need to invest in training their employees to be more agile, more adaptable. And this will include developing skills like critical thinking, problem solving, that sort of thing. Rather than this is how to do your job, it's going to be more creative teaching.
Paul Matthews picks up a nice point about agility too.
And finally, one thing I hope will happen, but may not, is an increased agility. It's interesting, Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, said that things are changing faster than ever, but they will never change this slowly again. That's a really interesting thought experiment. So L&D must become more agile.
And Sue Stockdale adds more about a change to focus on peer learning and team coaching.
So the effects of collaboration and learning from your colleagues, whether that's in a team or as peers. And therefore, questions will also come into play in that context as well, because the way that the team or the group ask questions of one another, interrogate the learning, the knowledge from other people, will be important in terms of how it's learning and development.
Bringing up the very important point of knowing our audience is Paul Westlake.
L&D teams will need to continue creating flexible ways of accessing learning, accessed any time, anywhere, any device, because ultimately that's what our learners are asking for. And the last one for me is a focus on future-ready skills. So as technologies advance, the workplace becomes increasingly global. Organisations will need to prepare their employees for the future of work. They don't know what it looks like yet. So it goes back to what I was saying about those developing those skills like adaptability, emotional intelligence, digital literacy. And these things, I think, will highlight the importance of L&D in the modern workplace. So by embracing digital intelligence, focusing on workforce agility, we can help organisations thrive going forward.
And I'll leave it to David Perring to summarise predictions.
So 2024 is going to have a focus on L&D teams showing what they're worth, how they contribute to the bottom line, how they increase the performance and effectiveness of their organisations. If you can't convey that, I think you're going to struggle in the year ahead.
In contrast to predicting what they thought might happen this year, I asked some of our contributors what they hoped might be in store for L&D. We start by going back to AI with Gail Watson.
On a more positive note, I would like to share some hopes I have for myself and the ecosystems of learning professionals and providers I work with. Generative AI has shaken L&D this year. Almost every single talk and presentations I attended in 2023 made some reference to it. As we're starting to get some grasps about usage, potentials and return, I hope in 2024 we will all challenge ourselves to leverage the huge data potential of AI and develop processes where AI become a real ally when evaluating learner skills and competence gap, creating better user-centered experience, more activities, and evaluate impact in a more refined way.
In the Workplace Learning and Performance in 2024 report from World of Learning, it stated that 30% of L&D teams are operating without a learning strategy, and that just 1 in 5 business leaders believe L&D contributes significantly towards the achievement of their 3 priority goals. Building on the value that we know good L&D teams can provide to the organisation that they work in, David Perring said this.
I think my hopes for 2024 that we as industry, as learning professionals, increase our effectiveness and efficiency in how we deliver learning. And I think that primarily means about how we personalize the learning experience, both in understanding what people need to learn, but also, maybe more importantly, how they learn. There are some great technologies that are evolving at this moment, enabled by AI, amongst other things, including adaptive learning and scenario-based learning, which really enable us to tune in to unique individual experiences. That's what I'd hope, because I think that drives great value, but also great efficiency in terms of the learning experience as well. And that has impacts for the individual, but also businesses, as they're able to make sure that their people are ready in the fastest amount of time in the most efficient ways.
Stella Collins connects AI and behaviour change.
I really hope that L&D start to use AI to free up their time to connect more into the business and to understand the challenges that their colleagues face and to help them see where effective learning can be part of the solution. So they're really talking, you know, understanding what are the problems we face and how can we build real solutions to solve real challenges. I really hope they'll focus on the transfer of skills. It's no good talking about upskilling if you're not focused on how people can build new habits and behaviours in the workplace that improve performance and productivity and really add value to the organisation in which you work. I do want people to realise the value of AI and how it can make you much, much more efficient, so long as you've got an effective background. But rather than trying to become prompt engineers, because I think that's going to be almost impossible to keep up with all the changes that are going to happen. And, you know, L&D have got real other skills that they need to focus on. But instead, they look out for apps and tools that have done a lot of that background work for them. They've done the prompt engineering and that present really valuable solutions to real challenges.
Tina Seth brings our conversation to the impact of our work and the emphasis on what the organisation needs.
I think I've always worked to get people to see L&D as a continuous process and for commissioners of training to move away from investing most resources into a course or into a training event and move towards investing more in what happens before and after training. These two phases, research has shown, has much more impact on actual behaviour and performance change. People may have good intentions after formal training, maybe they're even inspired, but they need that intention to be nurtured, either through keeping in touch with fellow delegates or mentoring or some other type of collaboration to take forward what they've learned in their real working environment. Otherwise, they run into obstacles or the environment isn't right for what they've learned and the learning is lost. So I hope clients and L&D leads in general think about outcomes and the change they want to achieve well ahead of thinking about any course or a content of a course. How many, etc. This is too often a step that isn't taken. Too many times people are scratching their heads if I ask, well, what would the change in the workplace be if this course is successful? What will the change in performance be? How will they measure this? It's not really a result to say X number of people attended X course. The follow-up question is always, so what? And I think there's some culture changes needed in that area as well. Another concept that I really believe in from my time in corporate L&D is the line of sight back to the business. So don't lose your line of sight. So what is the strategy of the business? What are the priority things to get right and what are the gaps? So I hope L&D leads spend a lot of time understanding the business they work in, maybe even shadowing roles or doing them for a while, so they get to grips with the most important skills needed and how those skills mean better delivery. They are then in a much more informed position to draw up an L&D plan that is relevant and outcome focused, linked to my previous point about thinking about outcomes first. And this in turn builds a lot of credibility with the business, so they keep coming back to you for upskilling because they can actually see the difference that it makes.
Upping our game is what Paul Matthew suggests.
I've got many hopes about L&D waking up to what really matters. For example, I would love to see L&D focusing more on performance as an output from their initiatives instead of the current common focus on input in terms of content and how it's delivered. And this focus on output and performance needs to be coupled with a better sense of what the business needs and the ability to talk about this in business terms. And of course, even if you don't think you've got a business, you've an organization which is maybe serving patients or constituents, you've still got to think about what are the really prime drivers for the purpose of that organization and its existence. So what we're really talking about here is performance consultancy as a process that establishes why performance is not where it needs to be and what part, if any, L&D needs to play in solving that performance puzzle.
Jeanette Tessier is the author of Get That Course Online and focuses her hopes about improving the quality of what L&D teams and companies deliver.
My hopes for L&D in 2024 are that there is a recognition that box-ticking exercises when it comes to training interventions just not going to wash, not only from the point of view of protecting the organisation from anything that might come along and not perhaps go the way they want, but also from the point of view of employees wanting to have some really quality training interventions and not just be sitting there ticking a few boxes and that's the way it is. And I think that is the case across the three different disciplines of training that can be delivered. So there's face-to-face or hands-on practical experiential training, there's the virtual live training, and then there's also on-demand digital training, so pre-recorded online courses. And my hope is that L&D teams recognise that there are strengths and weaknesses to all three of those types of training intervention, and that they design balanced and blended programmes that take advantage of those strengths and weaknesses to make sure that they provide something that is as effective as it possibly can be.
In my work outside of Training Journal, I focus on live online learning, so it warms my heart to hear someone else preaching in what I believe. Jeanette also makes a great point about developing our own skills and organisations investing in their L&D teams for the future.
The other thing that I would really hope is that there is less assumption that any kind of online intervention, whether it's live online or pre-recorded, is somehow lesser in value and should therefore be cheaper than a face-to-face intervention. I think there are additional costs associated with face-to-face training, such as having people in a particular location, whether that involves travel or accommodation or catering or whatever it might be. But those costs are not part of the training delivery. The training delivery itself, the quality doesn't go down just because it's delivered in a different medium, or at least it shouldn't go down just because it's delivered in a different medium. So I really hope that L&D teams are prepared to invest in decent quality training, whether it is delivered face to face, whether it is delivered online live, or in an on-demand digital format.
Tina Seth picks up on the hybrid working and virtual learning, but also has a very different opinion.
Final thing is, with hybrid working here to stay, I think asynchronous learning will become ever more embedded, micro-learning sites, much more pre- and post-course individual work that people can do when it suits them. So I think it'll be harder and harder to justify bringing people together, even remotely, at a set time and date. And the reasons should link to networking and collaborating benefits or peer exchange of views and solutions, for example, as with action learning sets. But even those can be self-directed by groups of learner. So I do wonder whether the concept of trainer with pre-prepared slides, pre-prepared content, kind of has really any space in a group setting. So I think we will start to see that sort of teaching evaporate a little bit.
A really great point from Daniel Taylor that should drive all of the work that we do.
I hope that learning development continues to be representative and particularly inclusive, which can be a challenge, but it's not impossible, particularly with a hybrid world. It's so important to understand your learners' needs and adapt to these. It does mean that you will constantly be, you know, adapting and updating and flexing your content. For example, PowerPoint is not the way forward all the time. It has its merits, but not all the time. So maybe just as a thought, how will you be more inclusive within 2024?
Diving into more detail about accessibility and inclusion is Susie Miller, Director of ILA Hub.
I only have one hope for L&D in 2024, and that is that this year is the year that the industry finally gets properly on board with making all of the learning content we create accessible and inclusive as the default. Just to clarify what I mean by this, making learning content accessible means making sure that people with disabilities or access needs aren't excluded and have the same access to content as other learners. The best practice way of doing this is to follow the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. When it comes to being inclusive, that's a slightly different thing when it comes to learning. Our definition of inclusive learning at ELA Hub is learning that makes everyone feel welcomed, considered and valued, and provides a good learner experience. I believe that for far too long, there have been far too many excuses in our industry about why this doesn't matter. Things like it only applies to a few people, or it's only relevant for public sector organisations, or we don't have the time or budget, or it's just too difficult. I think these attitudes are slowly changing. I saw some definite glimmers of hope in 2023. For example, in other countries like the US, where the L&D industry seems to be far ahead of us in terms of accessibility awareness. For me, this was brilliantly confirmed in a UConn Learning webinar I went to in November, when Ray Shilin, their Director of Quality, shared that the percentage of their clients asking for accessible courses had increased from about 25% about 5 years ago to somewhere between 60 and 75% now.
Susie continues, giving us a great example of where we can get inspiration outside of our own industry and perhaps a call to action for those organisations that run awards.
Another glimmer of hope was seeing how other industries, like the gaming industry, embraces accessibility and views it as something which leads to innovation and better experiences for everyone. This so much so that in 2023, they introduced awards for the best accessible solutions, something I'm hopeful will eventually happen in our industry too. Another positive for me was the neuroinclusion agenda. I think the fact that so many people now are more aware of conditions such as ADHD, autism, and dyslexia, and may have been diagnosed with these conditions themselves or know others who have, has really helped to emphasize that disability and access needs are not an us versus them issue, but something that affects more people than most learning practitioners imagine. To back this up, fantastic research released in May 2023 by the Boston Consulting Group revealed that while most organizations report that their workforce includes just 4% to 7% of employees with disabilities, the real percentage is much higher. In actual fact, their research included 28,000 employees in 16 countries, showed that about 25% considered themselves to have a disability or a health condition that limited a major life activity. So what I really hope for in 2024 is that these and other glimmers of accessibility and inclusion hope begin to make a difference, that they lead to a paradigm shift, a complete culture change, where the industry finally wakes up to the fact that in 2024, it is simply not ethical, cost-effective, or good for an organization's reputation to design learning content that creates barriers and excludes learners due to a disability or an access need. And that means that accessible and inclusive learning content, as the default, finally becomes mainstream and not simply a nice to have.
Rounding off this question is a focus on what L&D can and should be doing within organisations, from John Kennard.
But the fact that there's so much invention, innovation and progress going on, it's really going to affect learning and development, kind of content libraries, workflows. It will mean that L&D has to justify its existence a whole lot more in terms of what it can bring. because a lot of the stuff that it previously has done is going to be there already and enabled by AI technology.
Strong comment from John there that L&D will have to justify its existence. This has been a conversation as long as I can remember in my 25 or more years in L&D. And to be honest, I hear it at marketing conferences and in conversations with IT too. We're not alone in needing to do this. John continues.
I would like to hope that L&D practitioners choose to embrace and use the best of AI rather than rejecting it as a threat and a competitor. Ultimately, it will be for some people and their jobs, but the onus is on everyone to kind of see it for the best, what they can use it for, and the parts of your job that it does impact. Make sure that you understand how you can mitigate the risk, focus on the other stuff that AI can't do. And this is all very utopian, isn't it?
Kathy Hoy, CEO of CLO 100, has this to finish us off with.
I know that this is quite a commonly used phrase now, probably overused actually, but I'd love to see this year being the year that learning and development start to get a seat at the table. And I suppose practically what I mean by that is that they have some level of strategic influence and can actually help to guide the organisation that they work for into the future and really leading through people development. That is what I would love to see this year.
That's a lot of predictions, ideas, details and points to think about, discuss and reflect upon. Do please get involved with the conversation on one of our social platforms with what you think about what's been said in this episode. And thank you so much to all of our contributors. And if you want to contribute in the future, just head to trainingjournal.com and let us know.
One more voice to add to the mix is mine. My name is Ryan and I am an AI voice from TechSmith's Audi 8 software. Joe has used Audi 8 to edit the audio from our amazing contributors and want to thank TechSmith. Joe has also used Camtasia and other cloud tools.
And I'll leave the very final words to Daniel Taylor.
So frankly, who knows what 2024 and beyond will bring, but it really is going to be an exhilarating ride.